rules are ready.
Mr. Chief Judge, members of the court, my name is Norman Thomas, and I'm here today to represent Deborah K. Moore in her appeal of her convictions. I'm with co-counsel, Mr. T. Scott Rennick, who also served as trial counsel in the matter. I would like to reserve 4 minutes, if I may.
Four minutes, yes, sir.
Ms. Moore asserts two assignments of error, the first of which contends that her de minimis act of a gesture of spitting was not sufficient to elementally form the basis of a conviction for assault of a law enforcement officer. And she was convicted of two of those particular offenses with respect to that one single act, the de minimis act of a gesture of spitting.
The fact that it's de minimis, boils down to a sufficiency issue on whether there was evidence sufficient to put the officer or officers in fear or apprehension of some harmful act, and spitting is the act that we're talking about.
Yes, Your Honor. And I'd like to unpack that a bit in my time with the court this morning. But the evidence, we'll put it this way. The question is, why isn't it sufficient? The trial court found it to be sufficient. And we will acknowledge that it can be argued, certainly, that it's consistent with guilt, the gesture of spitting. But we make a couple of points there. If you look at her conduct throughout the time that she was with the officers, whether you analyze it under the criminal definition or under the civil definition, the elemental definitions of what constitutes a common law assault, our position is that on this record, based on what happened that night on this record, the evidence is in equipoise as to whether her actions constituted an expression of derision or contempt toward these two deputies or an unequivocal appearance of an attempt.
The surrounding behavior and the destruction of property would not indicate a sign of respect for them, would it?
No, and it actually corroborates the point we're making. She acted out from 2:50 a.m. on the first encounter out on the highway at Route 30 and Quentin Church Road. She began to act out there, and she acted out all evening long. This is a grown person without a prior criminal history at 49 years old who lost it, and we acknowledge that. And she was profane, she kicked the wall, she beat her head against the wall. As the officer said, we heard everything that night.
But there was even the verbal threat against Deputy Green, wasn't there not?
Well,
and can't that be considered in totem in terms of the alleged assault?
It's all to be considered. But I want to make a point about that too. Deputy Green said that, and remember, at the time that happened, her hands were not restrained. They were out on Route 30 on the side of the road at the time that happened. And she didn't say, I'm going to. She said, I want to punch you in the face. And what did Deputy Green say in the same breath, in the same sentence? But she didn't do that.
Well, I'm not arguing that that is the assault, because that's not what we're here for. But can't the court take that all into consideration in determining whether the events that happened at the police station or the sheriff's office were in fact an assault?
It necessarily will, and it must take into everything into consideration. And yet, if that's not an assault, you go through the whole evening long. And Your Honor, when the court considers this for decisional purposes, ask where in the record is the real tiebreaker here? Because this gesture...
The testimony from both of the officers or deputies indicating that she spat at them. Then there was sort of the pullback and indicating it was a spitting gesture. But simply because there's not actually spittle found or spit found, that doesn't obviate the fact that it's an assault, does it? That would just mean that it's not a battery.
It doesn't mean that it is. It has to be an unequivocal, on the criminal side,
right,
the criminal definition, an unequivocal appearance of an attempt. On the civil, or excuse me, for the civil definition, the tortious definition, it has to be an act that is intended to place them in fear of imminent harm, and then in fact does place them in well-founded fear.
But the elements don't mix. You don't necessarily have to prove the element of putting the victim in fear if you're looking at the criminal element.
It could be one or the other.
Right, but you can see that they don't cross-pollinate, so to speak. You prove one element on the criminal side and one element on the tortious side, correct?
You prove a criminal definition, you prove the elements of the criminal definition, or you prove the elements of the tortious definition,
right.
Or you prove them both. But there's a third possibility in this evidence, and it's an equipoise with the others. That just like every other thing she did, cursing at them, calling them names, telling them that they were assaulting her, telling them that they were being mean to her, telling Deputy Green, call the sheriff. She held her vomitous phone up to his face. I mean, all of these things, you look at it, she's acting out. And at the end of the evening, this gesture of spitting, where she didn't spit, and Judge Bondurant found that on page 146 of the appendix, that it was a gesture. She didn't follow it up in any way. There was no action to repeat it. None. She went right straight on into the lockup. Nor were there any words that would give away what was her intent. What did she say anything?
But that doesn't that go to? I mean, and I appreciate the argument you're making because you have to take into consider everything. We have animus at a minimum from the evening's activities. Would you concede that?
She was very unhappy. Yes, sir.
Okay.
And she was very derisive toward them as well. Yes.
And so, if we have the gesture, why isn't that enough? If the, and I guess receiver is not the right word for somebody who might be beginning to spit at, but we'll call it the receiver. If the receiver perceives that that is happening, is that an assault, technically?
It can be, but it also can be yet another gesture of derision and contempt toward these officers. When there was no follow-up, there were no words to go with it. She did it. It was over, and she went straight into the lockup. And there's nothing here to exclude that reasonable hypothesis of innocence that it was just another gesture.
Well, except aren't reasonable hypotheses of innocence questions of fact that the trial, and this particular one that you're making, one that the trier of fact rejected?
Yes, but there's a limit on the trial court's discretion to choose between one inference and another. And here we come before the court on the de novo aspect of this review. It's a mixed question of law and fact, and the trial court's application of facts to the law and factual conclusions call for de novo review. And our position is that there's always left on this record the hypothesis of innocence that it was simply a gesture, that it was nothing more than that. And because she didn't repeat it or do anything else to elaborate on it, it was done and it was over and she was marched into the lockup.
But it's not an element that it's done more than once, is it?
It's not, but wouldn't that have given her away? If she had tried to do it a second time, we wouldn't be here. That would clearly have given away that it was an unequivocal attempt to spit on them. But she didn't do it. There's no talisman here to say, okay, well, the Commonwealth's evidence excluded that reasonable hypothesis of innocence. At the end of the day, no matter how you consider this evidence, that possibility remains a reasonable one, that it was just a mere gesture, because all night long, she'd been going through one gesture after another. And all of it was ugly, and all of it was directed toward these deputies. So what makes this one different? There's really nothing. It could have been different if the Commonwealth had additional evidence that, well, she tried a second time, or she said something. But where do you find...
If they had found spittle, does that change? Does that take the evidence out of equipoise?
I think we'd have a problem. Yes, sir. It would. But they didn't find any. And really and truly, As Judge Malveaux pointed out, there was this excitable beginning where they said, well, she spit at us, and then they both walked it back. And they themselves, Green and Sergeant Boyle, ended up kind of correcting the Commonwealth as the cross-examination and examinations went on to say it was a gesture of spitting. And the trial court at the end found it was a gesture of spitting.
Well, you would agree, though, that spitting on someone is a battery.
Of course it is.
And so if somebody cocks their hand back with a fist and does like that but doesn't connect, how is that not sort of equivalent to what we have here?
It's not exactly equivalent because it is a higher level. I mean, let's remember, in the scheme of violence in this world, what Ms. Moore did to gain her two felony convictions were that big.
But they don't compare them, do they? I mean, usually in terms of what we're looking at is not whether one would be more egregious or result in something that's going to injure somebody more. That's not how we look at battery.
But merely cocking...
Or assault, correct?
I don't mean to interrupt.
No, it's okay.
Merely cocking your hand back. It's got to be filtered through all the surrounding circumstances.
So would this
is
be
it done from 20 feet away?
But
is it done while you're handcuffed?
Would this also be filtered through the same sort of lens? How
the
close
lens
they are,
of the totality.
What she's doing, the noises that she's making, isn't that sort of a similar and analogous situation?
It is. And what the Commonwealth was unable to do in this case was differentiate that this was a mere gesture, or was, in fact, that attempt to commit a battery, or was intended in and of itself to cause a reasonable apprehension of fear of harm. The third possibility, no matter how you slice this evidence, because of her acting out so much, always remains. They don't have anything in this record to say it doesn't remain. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time, but I also would like to do it on the basis that I can address the second assignment of error as well during my rebuttal.
Notice. Ms. Darren.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. We have in our brief and will this morning address the errors that other counsel has assigned separately as one error, and that is, was the evidence sufficient to support the conviction of assault in this case? And we, of course, have argued on brief and are here today to argue that the evidence was, in fact, sufficient. I think it's important to note a couple of things. Number one is that the reasonable hypotheses of innocence that had to be addressed by the Commonwealth in this case had to flow from the evidence itself. And we don't have a situation like we had in the unpublished case of Clark that Judge O'Brien wrote, where the defendant said, well, it was an accident. I didn't mean to spit. I was choking on pills. We don't have that kind of case here. What we have is a case where the officers testified as to what happened, and the defendant said, I didn't do it. It's not a case of, oops, I had
Mr.
an over...
I think what counsel is focusing on is not whether there's a conflict between the appellant admitting or denying, but in fact the actual act itself.
Well, I think the bottom line is that at that point, the issue is then, when you get past the reasonable hypothesis of innocence that the Commonwealth had to disprove in this case, was that whether this gesture, which ordinarily would be a question of fact for the fact finder to decide, was so de minimis that no reasonable judge could have found the defendant guilty on these facts.
You do agree with Mr. Thomas that the trial judge did in fact find that it is no more than a gesture?
I believe the court did make a statement to that effect, and that we are bound by that. But the court said...
Does that make a difference?
No, not in the outcome of the case. No, not at all. Because if she didn't spit, if she had completed the act, we would have a battery. The issue here is, was there adequate evidence to find an assault? And the trial court said there's no question I'm looking at pages 116 and 118. No question there was an overt act committed, that she made the appearance of spitting, that she made the gesture of spitting towards the two deputies in this case. And again, so the issue for this court is, could no rational fact finder have reached that conclusion? And we submit that under the facts of this case, that cannot be said.
Portion of the joint appendix that you just read from, that this was an overt act directed toward the two, does that fact finding address, and going to the anticipatorily, the second assignment, that it was a physical impossibility to make a gesture against these two because they were in different physical locations?
I think that the facts support the convictions for both defendants, both deputies. We have them in a hallway. They are walking her to a room after removing her from the magistrate's room where she was misbehaving. They are walking down the hallway. One deputy says that's Deputy Boyle, says that Ms. Moore made a gesture and a sound of, quote, blowing spit out, or, quote, hawking a loogie towards him and Deputy Green. That's on app 65.
Ms. Jones, is there anything to be gathered from, in anticipating the argument, that there was a indication that Sergeant Boyle said that he was on this side of the door? Is there anything that we or to draw from that? Is that simply a throwaway, or what is it we're supposed to take from that? Because essentially I think the position of the appellant is he's indicating an impossibility because of physical location.
I don't think that if you take the testimony of Deputy Green, Deputy Boyle, and then the dispatcher, who was also present, that there was some sort of impossibility. And certainly the trial judge, if that were the case, the trial judge would have made a factual determination on that, which would be binding on this court. I don't see anything in the record that indicates that there was an impossibility so for example, perhaps one officer was behind a glass partition or something and the other was not. That's not the kind of facts we have in this case. We have these two deputies and a dispatcher walking in the close, at some place in the record it says 2 feet. They're a distance of about 2 feet from the defendant. And that she makes the sound of spitting. It causes Deputy Green to check his person for spit. We have the second Deputy Boyle saying what he heard, that she's blowing out spit. She sounded like she was blowing out spit or hawking a loogie. And then we finally have the dispatcher saying she was positioned behind Deputies Green and Boyle, and she sees Moore turn her head towards the officers, and she hears Moore make a spitting sound in their direction. That's it. Appendix 74 through 75. So we don't have a situation where it's impossible for the conviction to be sustained with one officer and not the other. So again, under the facts of this case, the defendant was under arrest for being drunk in public. She was being, from the get-go, she was being belligerent towards these deputies, Boyle and Green. She's verbally abusive towards them. She's cursing obscenities. She is kicking so hard when she's put in the police vehicle that the vehicle rocks. She's taken to the magistrate's office at the police station where she's kicking the walls and headbutting the door. And she makes a statement towards the magistrate, calling her a terrible name. And while still cursing obscenity, she's being escorted down the hallway to a retaining area, at which time, as we've argued, from a distance of 24 inches or so, she makes this gesture of spitting, which causes one of the officers to check his uniform for spit. So we submit that under the facts of this case, that the trial court did not err in concluding that the defendant had made a gesture of spitting an overt act sufficient to sustain an assault conviction.
Do you concede that your sufficiency argument is better regarding the deputy who checked to see whether he had spit on him as opposed to the other?
Yes, it's stronger, but we have Dispatcher Strong's testimony, and she says she's behind both officers, and she sees the defendant turn her head towards both officers, and she hears Moore making the spit in their direction. So we submit that the evidence is sufficient to support the conviction. That we, one of us, might not have reached that same determination is not relevant. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas, on page 64, line 14 of the joint appendix, there's a reference to the testimony of one of the officers. We were not more than a foot apart from each other, Deputy Green and myself. Doesn't that statement undermine this physical impossibility I'm anticipating your second point?
Not at all. And here's why. Every witness testified that Sergeant Boyle was behind her. Nobody ever said adjacent to her, always behind her. Pretend for a moment, in conference with the judges, that one is handcuffed. It is I'll add that she was moving forward, handcuffed, and both of them said he was behind her, and also Ms. Strong said he was behind her.
Does behind necessarily mean directly behind, or just not even with the shoulder?
There were multiple references to the word directly behind from Deputy Green. The evidence is that she turned her head. No witness said she turned her body. Every witness said she turned her head to the right. It's impossible to spit at somebody behind you. It just is. And even the highest tide mark of Sergeant Boyle was it was like between us. Well, keeping in mind that Green was somewhat off to the right, marching toward the door, then that would make sense. And if whether they were a foot apart or not, he's still behind her according to the uniform testimony of every witness was there.
Do you agree with Ms. Darren that the dispatcher said, turned and made the gesture at both of them?
She said she didn't see it. She said she was behind his shoulder, and all she could see was that her head turned to the right. But she didn't see spit.
But, counsel,
and
I think what Judge Russell was asking is in reference to what the dispatcher testified to, and I guess to what emphasis the court could put on that. The dispatcher indicated that the appellant spat at both of them, correct? Whether she actually spat or not, that was the testimony.
She said it was like it was toward his right shoulder, but she never said it was toward his right shoulder, and she said she couldn't see. I'd like to go back to the first point. The Commonwealth, a flaw in the Commonwealth's argument is they're attempting to shift the burden of proof. Ms. Moore doesn't have to prove anything or disprove anything. The Commonwealth has to stand on its own evidence to prove each and every element, and it cannot exclude the reasonable hypothesis of innocence that remains as the residue of this case. If this is not, in other words, if this is enough, then there's no act that will never be not enough. My time is up.
Thank you very much. We'll step down and greet counsel and thereafter take up the case of Dickerson versus the Commonwealth.